This is Purple Radio on demand.
Welcome to Sportsfeed, your twice-weekly podcast where we discuss all things sport in the Northeast. My name is Sanjay Surya. I'm joined today by Joe Harston. From university matches to professional competitions, we've got you covered with all the news, insight and analysis you need. Today we'll begin by talking about women's football's 3-1 loss to Loughborough as the title race heats up before talking about the international call-ups for Saoirse Noonan and Poppy Pritchard for the Republic of Ireland and England under-19s respectively. Then we'll look forward to this weekend's footballing action in the Northeast, previewing a big round of fixtures for Newcastle, Sunderland and Middlesbrough. Let's get into it. So as you might have been able to tell, we are not joined by our usual co-presenter, Joel Adkins, but we are joined by Joe Harston, who is our Northeast footballing expert and just about happens to be Palatinate Editor-in-Chief. Welcome to the podcast, Joe.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, great to have you on board. And just to start off with, it was Durham Women AFC 1, Loughborough 3 in the Bucks Women's Football League. And like we said in the intro, Durham's advantage at the top has gone with a disappointing performance at home.
Yeah, it's a real shame. I mean, it's the nature of such a tight division like this is, that losing one game, I mean, it's the first game they've lost all season, and losing that has meant that with two games to go, they are level on points with St Andrews. They're only a 1 point ahead of Nottingham with them still to play. So yeah, for a neutral, it's very exciting, but from a Durham point of view, it's a really disappointing performance and result.
Yeah, they went 3-0 down, and the goal that they got in the end was just a consolation. They tried a different approach coming into the match, trying to sit back as Loughborough are known for being a possession team. But that plan pretty quickly went out of the window after Loughborough got a goal within the opening 10 minutes. And from then, Durham were just chasing the game, really. Do you think it's the wrong approach to sit back?
I mean, hindsight's a beautiful thing, but it does certainly sound like it, especially if this is a different approach to how they would usually take it. I mean, a home game against a team that you are at the time, I can't do my maths in my head right now, but basically they're quite a few points ahead of. I mean, obviously they're now only 5 points ahead of them, so yeah, basically if to sit back against a team that are quite far below them in the division. It's unorthodox. It's definitely an orthodox approach in professional football. I think people would question that. I think fans in the stands would be questioning that. But obviously, sometimes it's easy to overthink things, and maybe that's what happened here, trying to counteract a possession style team as Loughborough are, and it obviously hasn't worked in their favour. And I mean, if Loughborough are resolute in the defence, then a counter attacking style just isn't going to work.
Yeah, Joe Harston really struggling there to add 5 and 3, but moving on.
I had to take away 3.
Yeah, it's complicated. I mean, we can't all study difficult subjects, can we? You do accounting and finance.
Yeah, okay. I was trying to work out when the league table in front of me was from and whether I had to take off more points than I needed to, but it turns out there were 8 points. There was 8 points of difference before this game. So yeah, there was 8 points difference before this game, and it was just adding 5 and 3. But the pressures of being on Purple Radio clearly are getting to me and my math skills.
you clearly don't get this big pressure at a smaller media outlet like Palatinate, do you? But moving swiftly on, so Durham were 2-0 down at the halftime break. A late goal at the end of the half helped really boost Loughborough going into the break, before getting another goal on the other side of halftime, killing the game off, like we said. Faye Dale managed to pull one back. She continues her very good goal-scoring season so far, and hopefully that momentum can come for the final two matches of the season.
Yeah, let's hope so. I mean, playing against Nottingham, a team that they're only 1 point ahead of now, it's going to be a very tough game. And yeah, hopefully that goal-scoring form does continue. They'll definitely need it. And then to play Northumbria finally, they're 5 points ahead of them at the moment, so if Northumbria win their next game and Durham fail to beat Nottingham, then you know it could be another team that could be catching them by the end of the season. But hopefully that won't be the case. Let's not forget that this is Durham's first loss of the season.
Yeah, and you said it earlier that whilst this loss was not great for Durham, it is fantastic for a neutral, because you've now just got 1 point splitting the top three, and that match against Nottingham next Wednesday is going to be a huge one. Given the way that the league table currently looks, Durham will be really anxious to get a win and keep pace with St Andrews, who are playing Stirling at home, who currently have 0 points on the board. So it feels almost like a must win for Durham, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, with 0 points on the board, you can't expect Stirling to really pull out any sort of miracle against a team like St Andrews that are challenging for the title and level on points with Durham. So Durham, if they, it's very much in their own hands, and if they can't do it themselves, then they're going to have to pray for a miracle, really, between Stirling and St Andrews.
Yeah, fortunately, though, there are many ways that you can follow that match, because it will be the women's football team's annual charity match, and be sure to get down there for the 7:30 kickoff next Wednesday. And if you can't make it down to the match, you can listen live on Purple Radio Sport. We will be bringing you live coverage of that match, so be sure to either tune in or turn up to the ground, because this is not one to miss. Anyway, moving on, the other big news released over the last few days were international call-ups for both Saoirse Noonan, who will be representing the Republic of Ireland, and Poppy Pritchard with England under-19s for the upcoming international break. The two Durham Women FC players have been regular starters for the team so far this season, and their impressive performances have been rewarded with call-ups. Joe, Noonan was in the squad for the last international break, but failed to get any minutes. Do you think that she's got a better chance of actually getting on the pitch this time for the Republic of Ireland?
Yeah, I really hope so. But Ireland do have an excellent attack. From the top of my head, I believe that Katie McCabe of Arsenal is also. I mean, she's up against her for a place. If she's up against Katie McCabe for a place, then it's obviously going to be very, very difficult to get into the starting lineup. But hopefully she can get some minutes this time round. It's really just great to see her back in the Ireland squad. She's been absolutely electric this season for Durham so far, being able to keep Amy Andrews out of the team. So it's hardly a surprise to see her called up, but let's just hope that she can get some minutes on the board this time.
Yeah, Noonan has got 5 goals so far this season for Durham, and has really managed to, like you said, keep a player like Andrews out of the team, has managed to provide goal-scoring cover for Beth Heppel, who is yet to start the season as she makes her recovery back from injury. So she has certainly been key for Durham. Do you think she struggled to make a breakthrough on the international stage because she has got less publicity when she's playing, because she's playing in the tier below, whereas players in the WSL, even if they're not playing for one of the big guns, we'll still get more people watching them, more people reporting on them. So their good performances are better rewarded in terms of publicity and people just talking about them, really.
I mean, yeah, very possibly. But also, you know, you kind of have to see that there are different divisions, and it is a higher quality of standard in WSL compared to the Championship. But this call-up is still very well deserved. And maybe, I can't imagine the publicity is the reason why Saoirse Noonan might not be starting for Ireland. I think it is more a case of, she isn't playing week in, week out at such a high level. That being said, the Women's Championship is still a high level of women's football, and playing against some of the teams that they'll be coming up against, Saoirse Noonan is more than capable of performing well against many international sides that Ireland will be facing in this break.
Yeah, I think it really is a testament to Noonan that her big performances so far this season have come in the Conti Cup, where you do get a bit more exposure and more people talking about you. And whilst Durham are yet to face a WSL team in the Conti Cup, they've got Aston Villa coming up in a month's time. So do you think that's another opportunity for Noonan to really prove herself with a bit more exposure? And if Durham can get out of their group and perhaps get a quarterfinal against the likes of Man City, United, Chelsea, would that also help her stock skyrocket?
Yeah, I mean, let's hope so. Maybe not too much, because we don't want to lose her from Durham. But yeah, I think that Aston Villa game, just like in men's football, when you're playing against a team in the division above, the publicity that comes with it is excellent. And just in general with the WSL, with the Conti Cup, we absolutely love it. It's some of our favourite matches of the year. We covered some of it quite a lot last year in Palatinate. And they played Manchester United last year. The nature of the group stage, having a group match when it finishes in a draw, there's a chance of a penalty shootout at the end. So things like that provides far more drama. I'm trying to think, last season they beat Man U in the cup, and they also beat Everton in the cup. They beat them in 90 minutes as well. So yeah, Aston Villa, probably a stronger side than Everton are, or the Everton, the same team that they played last season were. However, again, When you talk about publicity, this is their chance to do that. And even a loss against Aston Villa, we were discussing this beforehand, how automatic qualification of the next round is looking unlikely for Durham. However, they are yet to lose a Conti Cup game this season. So if they continue to to do well and can maybe even get some sort of, you know, maybe take Aston Villa to a penalty shootout, then there's absolutely no reason why they can't get through to the next round. And as you say, face one of the big dogs, someone like a Man U or a Liverpool or a Chelsea, someone like that would be excellent publicity.
Yeah, it would just be huge for the club in general to get big teams coming to Maiden Castle again, or even a trip to away to the big teams. And it really gives the club a boost.
Yeah, just not Man U again, though, because I'm a bit sick of playing them.
Really? Even if we get wins against Man U?
Well, two County Cup wins against Man U, but then the 5-0 loss in the FA Cup last year kind of brought everyone back down to earth a little bit, I think.
Yeah, maybe this time we can take on Chelsea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was with the Man U game. They were 3-0 up, and then they brought Alessio Russo, and it's like, come on, it's already over.
Yeah, but to have Alessio Russo play against Durham is good publicity,
well,
no matter
crazy,
the result.
It's crazy, isn't it?
So.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess a win's a win. And Poppy Pritchard, once again, has been called up for the England under-19 squad. And unlike Noonan, she has been getting regular minutes for England. And not only been getting regular minutes, but has got a fair few goals. And Pritchard is still only 17 and has got a huge future ahead of her. How key is it that she's getting minutes, not just in the WSL Championship, but also on an international level with players alongside her who will be playing for bigger clubs alongside bigger players? How important is that for her?
Yeah, it's absolutely massive. And it also gives her an edge when she's in that international group, because she could be there with you know, her teammates in the international group. They're probably coming from youth academies at big WSL sides. However, she's coming in far more match fit, playing against higher level opposition week in, week out, because she's playing a professional standard in the Championship, whereas she might be, you know, competing for places in that England team against players that will be playing in youth leagues. So that's absolutely huge. It's not a massive surprise to see her called up again. As you said, she's scoring goals already for England. She's really coming to her own this season for Durham, and it's absolutely brilliant to see her performing on the international stage as well.
Yeah, she's had an interesting season so far for Durham. She got two goals in her first two starts against London City Lionesses and Crystal Palace.
The game that we can't mention.
Yeah. Let's try and forget the other 9 goals in that game against Crystal Palace. But she scored a pretty tidy goal. And since then, though, her season has tailed off a bit. She's yet to score since then. Do you think she's being a bit overplayed right now? And she's not quite at her full sharpness? And could these extra England caps be almost a bit of a burden, and she needs to kind of take her time a bit more, because like we said, she's still only 17. This is her first real season playing at the top level.
I mean, it's certainly possible. I wouldn't want to kind of make that judgment for myself. I guess that's something that you'd have to ask her. Maybe you could get her on the podcast one day, but I think that it's a possibility. Obviously, it's probably the intensity of professional football and playing professional football week in, week out is probably something that she hasn't got used to until this season. So it's possible, but let's not forget, she's not an out-and-out striker. She isn't expected to be the goal scorer. Just because she hasn't scored since those games, that doesn't necessarily mean she's not performing well. What's also quite interesting is that with these Conti Cup games coming up, I don't think that she's started. And I mean, definitely the ones I've been watching, she hasn't been starting in those games. And it's almost like the opposite from last season, where the Conti Cup was the opportunity for her to actually get her first minutes. Now it's actually a case of that's her opportunity to be rested. And I can't see this England call-up as a bad thing. I think that opportunities for young players like this are absolutely excellent. And she should be excited about it rather than kind of see it as a burden at this early stage in her career.
Yeah, like you said, just because she hasn't been getting goals as well, she has been putting in some very good performances. That assist she got against Birmingham over the weekend, just that matey run down the left-hand side before pulling it into Noonan, was really impressive and really just showed her quality. And like you said, she knows that she's not in the team to be the main goal scorer. And while she might be getting more goals in the England fold, when she plays for Durham, it's a different thing is required from her. And I think she's shown a lot of good awareness to know what to do and what not to do at the right times for Durham. So I do completely agree with you that I wouldn't be too worried about the mini goal drought that she's going through right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The other thing that we'll be previewing today is we have got three fixtures for our football teams in the Northeast, and whilst we normally neglect them a bit on this podcast, we have now got a Northeastern football expert with us.
self-proclaimed.
Self-proclaimed Northeastern football expert, but he not only knows how the football is played in the Northeast, he also knows how the football is refereed in the Northeast, because I hear he was a Teesside Ref of the Year in 2019, so he can almost be our own Peter Walton.
I did not tell you to say that. But I have been compared to I was compared to Peter Walton on PAL TV in my first year, which I was not particularly happy about.
Well, either way, I'm sure your analysis will be lovely as we start off by talking about Newcastle's season so far. And after the incredible highs of last season, managing to get into the top four deservedly, whether that was because of other teams underperforming or not, they certainly do warrant their place in the Champions League this season. But it's been a bit of a stuttering season so far for them, and they have not been helped recently by a very, very lengthy injury list. But they've got Chelsea this weekend, as they currently sit seventh in the league. What do you think they should be aiming for in terms of a good season so far? Is it too unrealistic to expect another top four finish? Or,
in my opinion, yes, based on the way they've started. The top four at the moment look excellent. Teams that have made mass improvements from last year as well, such as Spurs, and then obviously City, and Liverpool, and then obviously City and Arsenal just constantly look like the top two in the league. That being said, Newcastle obviously beat Arsenal a few weeks ago. So yeah, Newcastle's inconsistency so far, I think that means that I think seventh right now is a good place for them to be. And I think if they finish around there, maybe if they've even finished in Europa League places, they should be very pleased with that. I think that when the Saudi ownership came in and they started spending all this money, I think people started to expect that we would see them in the Champions League in the future. For Eddie Howe to do what he's done with the current squad he's got and to get them into the Champions League is mass overachievement in first season. And I think that this injury crisis was something that was probably quite predictable, in that it's a massive step up in games, it's a massive step up in travel, they're still in the League Cup. But like, granted, they start later because they're in the Champions League, but the point is they're still in the League Cup and they've made it to the quarterfinals. They're in the Champions League and still have a I don't want to say good chance, but they've still got a chance of making it to the next round. This increase in games and increase in intensity in games is obviously going to lead to, you know, poorer performances in the league, and that could also be due to a long injury crisis. So yeah, I think that if they can finish where they are about now, I think it's not a bad result for them. And I think that some of my Geordie friends, I think they would also be quite happy with that too.
Yeah, because I think what a lot of people said when they started getting the Saudi money in, they weren't going for the huge, high-profile Galactico-style signings. They were being more sensible with it to try and build up slowly through the league by getting proven Premier League players in. And whilst these players know how to play in the Premier League well, they're not perhaps used to fighting on all four fronts at once and having to deal with playing two matches a week every single week. So, like you said, this injury crisis is a bit inevitable. And the main area they're affected right now is up front, because their two recognised strikers, Alexander Isak and Callum Wilson, are both out for the foreseeable future. How can they try and find a way around this?
So, I mean, it looks like the expected way they'll see the way around this is with Anthony Gordon. I personally have been quite a critic of Anthony Gordon. However, the Euros, England under-21s Euros in the summer was, for them, or was for Anthony Gordon in particular, a massive breakthrough tournament. I don't think that I was unique in my criticism of Anthony Gordon before last season. And even when he went to Newcastle, I think that a lot of people kind of had their eyebrows raised at such a high fee. And I think that Everton fans were probably quite not happy to see him go at the time, but not long after were kind of relieved that they managed to get so much money for him. But over the World Cup, he played up front, he played down the middle, and having only seen him really play on the wing before that, everyone was quite surprised, or many people were quite surprised to see him play up front. He actually kept Cameron Archer out of the team, who I saw a lot of at Middlesbrough last season and thought absolutely deserved for England under-21s. But he really proved himself, and I think that while obviously England, the 21s Euros isn't quite the level of the Premiership, you know, kind of needs must. And I think that the fact that he scored against Arsenal, I mean, albeit being a tap-in, means that he can do a job there without a doubt. And with you know, with the quality around him, they've got quality midfield still. It's kind of, I think this makes the more sense of what they need to do to work their way around this injury crisis.
Yeah, I think it definitely does make more sense to rotate the squad a bit and get a player who has been starting, whilst he might be slightly out of position. Like you said, it's not the first time he's played down the middle. And even before Wilson and Isak got injured, he did show that he had improved his game so far this season in terms of goals. And like you said, he was getting a lot of criticism. And whenever you move for 45 million, which was probably overpriced at the time,
it did feel like it,
you're going to have a target on your back. And whilst he has initially struggled, he has, as painfully as it is for me, he has kicked on this season. And I think it's not ideal for him to be starting down the middle, but needs must for Newcastle at this point. Do you think that Newcastle should prioritise the Champions League a bit more, especially for the last two matches, or just try and really kick on with the Premier League?
Not for me. I mean, they're obviously in an interesting position here in that group is ridiculously tight. I think I read something yesterday that said if Newcastle beat PSG and if AC Milan can beat Dortmund in the next game, I think everyone in the group is within a point or two of each other. I think at that point anybody could win that group. However, I don't think it is within their best interest to focus on the Champions League. They've already got an injury crisis. It's not going to be the first time they play in the Champions League. Oh, sorry, it's not going to be the last time they play in the Champions League, sorry. The squad is ever improving and they will be a top four team probably consistently in the next few years. When this draw came out, people did not expect them to make it out of this group. They're still in a very good position where even if they don't prioritise the Champions League, they could still end up in third place. And a Europa League run for them and the capabilities of this squad, there's no reason why they can't make it far in that competition too, albeit against Liverpool. Newcastle could definitely make it far in that competition too. So for me, when the injury crisis is here and they're already bottom of the group at the, you know, at the time of recording this, I think that focusing on the Champions League might be a little bit silly.
Yeah, I mean, I think it wouldn't be a bad thing if they finished bottom of their group. I feel like even finishing third and dropping into the Europa League adds more problems than it does boost morale, because also if they drop into the Europa League, it's not even like when you go through in the Champions League, you go to the round of 16, they'll still need to negotiate is it still called round of 32? Or do they call it the playoff now?
I think
now,
it's called a playoff round because some go past that round. Yeah, it's confusing.
The group winners now go past that round in the Europa League and second place teams play the Champions League team.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just an extra two fixtures on the list. And this whole injury crisis, like we said, has been built up because of fixture congestion. So if they finish bottom of the group, just out of Europe, they can focus on the Premier League, they can focus on the FA Cup, the League Cup, if they're still in that.
They're still in that. They've got Chelsea in the next round.
Yeah, they've got Chelsea in the next round. They've got Chelsea this weekend as well.
Exactly, so.
It's been a long time since Newcastle won a trophy, so that would also provide a great boost to the fans, and I think the fans would be satisfied with that, even if they do crash out of the Champions League and Europe altogether.
Yeah, I think you have to be realistic with it. I mean, to playing Chelsea in the next round of the FA Cup, of the League Cup even, I mean, this weekend might be a nice little kind of preview for that. But yeah, currently with the teams left in the League Cup, it's a great opportunity for them to win it again. They've already knocked out Man U, who beat them in the final last year. They knocked out Man U at Old Trafford with a team without any recognised centre-backs in. They had Paul Dummett and Emil Kraft playing at centre-back. It was all over the place, and yet they still managed to turn over Man U away. So you can see what even the reserve in this squad can do. In the League Cup, I think that this is probably an even better chance than last year to win it. They've knocked out Man U and Man City already. I can't see, Chelsea shouldn't be as hard as them, although they are on the up at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't look down at the League Cup. It's a very competitive trophy and is tricky to win. So.
But with eight teams left, two of them are Middlesbrough and Port Vale, I don't want to slag off my own team here, but the fact that Middlesbrough Port Vale is in the next round, one of them is guaranteed to be a semi-finalist. If Newcastle can Newcastle can get past Chelsea, there's a strong chance they end up in the semi-final against a team that isn't even a Prem club. I just think that in general, the amount of top six teams that have left the competition and the fact that there is guaranteed to be a non-Prem club in the semis means that they're in a very good, it's a better position than they were in last year to get this far.
I think fans and pundits alike always like to right off the League Cup until you get to the quarterfinals or the semi-finals. When you're within touching distance of the trophy, I feel Newcastle are definitely at that point, yeah. Like you said.
Suddenly it's not a Mickey Mouse competition anymore.
If they win their quarterfinal and they draw the winner of Middlesbrough versus Port Vale, at that point, you're looking at that Wembley final, aren't you? And
well,
trophy.
I'd like to think not, but it's very possible. It's very possible that, I mean, and I'm sure a lot of Newcastle fans that might be getting carried away with themselves, yeah, would genuinely be thinking about it like that, especially having knocked out the holders and the league title winners in this competition. They'll feel like they deserve it this year.
Yeah, one team that is no longer in the League Cup but is still doing very strongly in the Championship is Sunderland, who have got Plymouth away this weekend, and that is a long trip for them, but I guess that's a problem with Plymouth getting promoted. But Sunderland unbeaten in three, just inside the playoff places, and they'll really be looking to follow up a decent season last year, won't they, and just do better in the playoffs, really, because that top two are really starting to run away with it, aren't they? So playoffs look like the best shout for Sunderland.
Yeah, I think that although Leeds are closing in, I mean, Leeds and Southampton are both closing in on Ipswich and Leicester. However, I can't imagine Sunderland are going to be able to pick up enough points to kind of make it towards automatics. Having seen Sunderland play this season, I think that they aren't as good a side as they were last season. One loan signing in particular in Amad Diallo. I don't think they've been able to replace him, or at least not with the same quality. They've got players in the team that have been consistently reliable and have been even better this season. Jack Clark has been one of the best players in the league this season, probably the best player in the league so far this season. Patrick Roberts, always looking dangerous. I had the pleasure of watching him a few times at Middlesbrough, and now he's at Sunderland. He's doing really well there too. I'm not expecting them to improve on last season. However, they've got a very, very young squad there, and a young squad that is theirs as well. Players like Dan Ballard or Joe Bellingham, where a player of that quality that is that young, you would usually be on loan from a top side. This isn't the case. This is, you know, these are players that they've actually managed to sign themselves. And although I don't think they will improve on last season's finish. If they finish in the playoffs, it's a lottery, and it's that cliche. It is a lottery, and who knows, that, you know, a club of Sunderland's size. Belong in the Premier League. It pains me to say it, but it's true. They're a club that belongs in the Premier League, and yeah, you never know. Maybe they'll get there this season.
Yeah, I think if I had to put money on it, I'd say they probably will make the playoffs, but I could not predict any further than that.
There's so many teams around them, though. If you're looking at already, you're looking at Leeds and Southampton are probably guaranteed for playoffs. I mean, it's very early on, but those two look excellent. That's assuming that Ipswich and Leicester take the automatic places. And then those two spots are so, so tightly contested. I mean, I think we're at eighth right now, but only maybe 1 point off Sunderland. I don't have the league table in front of me, but yeah, we're very, very close.
I remember looking at the league table earlier, and you can see a big chunk of teams building up
places. The top 20 podcast call it the seeded batch, where between about fifth all the way down to about 12th and 13th, those teams are all separated by about 3 points, and you know, we're just over, I think we're about a third of the way through the season now. I can't remember exactly how many games we're on, maybe 19 games played. So yeah, we're not even halfway through yet. So yeah, I would personally don't know if I'd be putting money on Sunderland to be getting into the playoff places yet, but I don't think I'd be putting money on anyone right now other than those four I named.
Yeah, fair enough, but you know, it's always worth having a bit of a gamble on the Purple Radio podcast. Well, we're not paying any money, so it's fine.
Oh, okay.
You know, when we do score predictions, that's all right.
Oh, okay, then.
So yeah, I think we can endorse that. You mentioned Jack Clark earlier, having a fantastic season for Sunderland so far. He's the second highest scorer in the league with 9 goals so far. It's a bit of a double-edged sword, though, his strong performances, because quite naturally, he's attracted the attention of a few Premier League clubs. So, rumour has it there could be a January transfer on the cards. How do Sunderland deal with this? How do they play the negotiations?
I mean, they brought him in from a top Premier League club. So Leeds sold him onto Spurs, and Spurs loaned him out to Sunderland last season, which was already, two seasons ago, he was loaned out to Sunderland, which was already a very, very good loan deal for a team in League One. Now for them to have him on permanent, I mean, obviously they hold the cards. To get rid of a player of that quality and who's so instrumental to your attack in January is I mean, shooting yourself in the foot, really, and I certainly wouldn't be back into the playoffs if they did that. I think they should be expecting more money in January than they would in the summer because they just don't have the time to replace him. I genuinely do think he's easily top three players in the league right now. On recent performances, definitely. So yeah, it's hugely important to them. He is massive in terms of how they play, offers so much of their creativity. They'd be very imbalanced and they'd be putting a lot of pressure on Patrick Roberts on the other side. Thinking off the top of my head at who their bench could be and who would replace him, thinking players like Alex Pritchard just do not have the quality that Jack Clark has. So yeah, I think that they should be doing everything in their power to keep hold of him. They did in the summer, they managed to fend off Burnley, I believe, in the summer. Let's hope that they can keep hold of him because he's a joy to watch.
How much control would you say Sunderland have, though, over the negotiations? Because at the end of the day, the Premier League clubs will have the pull of the Premier League as well as a lot of financial muscle behind them. Do you reckon they'll be able to say to Clark, just stay with us for the rest of the season and then if we don't get promotion, we'll have to let you go, really. But will they be able to persuade Clark to just see out the season, basically?
I mean, it's very possible, but also, I've just checked it now, and his contract doesn't run out until 2026. So whereas a lot of Championship teams kind of feel forced into letting their young talents go because their contract is running out. I mean, not a young talent, but Borough let go of Tuber Akpom this summer, and they kind of had to let him go. We let him go for 10 million with add-ons to Ajax. It was too hard to keep hold of Akpom because his contract, he only 1 year left in his contract. They kind of had no real choice but to cash in, otherwise it was letting him go on a free at the end of the season. So kind of, yes, the pull of the Premier League's there, but Sunderland hold the cards more than Jack Clark does in the way that they can negotiate a really high deal for him here. I'm thinking above 20 million for a player of his quality and still of his age, only 23 still. So yeah, easily above 20 million. If you look at, I'm trying to think of similar players that have left the Championship in recent years, that spring to mind, James Maddison's moved to Leicester from Norwich. You've got Jared Bowen's moved to West Ham from Hull. And you've got a less successful Keen Lewis Potter's moved from Hull to Brentford. Those are the type of players that kind of he reminds me of in terms of the move he would probably make up to the Premier League. And those were all very high money signings, but also two out of three of them very, very successful. I mean, look at James Maddison and Jared Bowen now.
Yeah, exactly. But also you'll have the January tax as well, because it's a lot easier to sell someone in July when you've got a whole month, a whole 2 months even, to bring in who you want and adjust to the sales. So they can add that to the price tag if they really want to try and get a big money deal for him in January.
Yeah, exactly. And also, if it's say Burnley that come in again, how much will that, by the time January comes around, how much will that Premier League pull be there for Burnley? Because Jack Clark might be looking at them thinking, well, they could be in the Championship again next season. Is it really worth making this jump now, or does he wait for someone else to come along, someone like a Crystal Palace maybe that a safer Premier League team that has that money to spend on him? Who knows? It could go out anywhere. But I know I'm enjoying watching Jack Clark right now, and I'm not a neutral, but if I was, then I would really want him to be staying in the Championship and to watch him week in, week out. It's very entertaining.
Yeah, I was reading about the rumour mill. I did see Crystal Palace come up, and we could chat more about that, but I feel like I've got the wrong former sport editor on to talk about Crystal Palace. So
yeah, that's Sparta.
I feel like we'll move on to something you know a lot more about, and that is Middlesbrough's season so far.
That's right.
One loss in their last 12 games, and just like last season, really, a slow start before really picking up momentum. And Carrick's still the man, isn't he?
He absolutely is. He absolutely is. And although there was a few Borough fans that were kind of losing faith in him, let's not forget that. I mean, Borough have picked up more points in the Championship than anybody else in 2023. I don't know if that includes the clubs that got promoted, but for the clubs that are still in the Championship, Borough, by quite a distance, I think, have picked up more points than anyone else in the Championship. And that is all down to Carrick. When he came in last year for Chris Wilder, he didn't change the kind of style of player too much. We changed the structure quite a lot. He got players playing for him very, very quickly. Players that moved position a little bit, playing a slightly different roles to how they did under Wilder. And yeah, the possession-based football is synonymous with, another ex-Man U player in Kieran McKenna, who's doing really well at Ipswich. Very similar free-flowing attacking football. And although we're a team that will concede a lot of shots, and you know, not keep too many clean sheets. Very, very entertaining team to watch. And probably, I mean, I have family members who have been watching Borough obviously a lot longer than I have, and they also, and there's a few of them that have said that this is the most entertaining Borough team they've ever watched. So, you know, they can't have any more plaudits than that for Michael Carrick.
Yeah, I mean, if the Borough fans love him, he's always going to get a lot more patience, especially if the results aren't going his way. But recent times, they have been going his way. So Carrick came in a few games into last season and he had a big gap to bridge to the top two. But he was able to do that. Borough were challenging for one of the automatic qualification spots for promotion to the Premier League, but they just fell away at the end and had to settle for fourth place. But you were saying earlier, it's a big gap to Leicester and Ipswich already forming. But given the momentum that Borough have, given the way that last season went, and they can do a similar thing this season. Also, Ipswich haven't been challenging here recently. I think they got promoted from League One last year.
Yeah, this is their first season in the Championship.
So yeah, their first season in the Championship. You never know, they could falter. Whilst Leicester look a lot more sure, I guess more similar to how Burnley looked last year. If Ipswich do falter, do you reckon that Borough can keep their momentum and once they start challenging the Leeds and the Southamptons, can kick on and put some pressure on Ipswich and maybe get that automatic promotion?
I mean, obviously it would be great if that could happen. At the moment, I don't think that that's where Michael Carrick's sights will be set. I mean, it's funny you should mention those teams, though, because we've played Southampton already and we beat them at home. We beat Leicester at home. Leicester have actually... The first away game that Leicester have lost all season was at the Riverside just before the international break. So, yeah, you mentioned those teams, and while we seem to be matching them on the pitch, it's the type of games, things like the Stoke game, we're losing 2-0 against Stoke when they're right down there, although albeit in good form. We lost against QPR, we're really struggling, and we lost 2-0 at home to QPR. Really, probably one of the most disappointing performances I've ever seen. We couldn't pick up a win against Sheffield Wednesday, who, you know, couldn't buy a point from anyone, and somehow we didn't manage to get 3 points from them. So it's funny, it's like the teams that we're trying to catch, we seem to be beating them on the pitch. We have Leeds coming up in a few weeks as well, and Ipswich not long after that. So even though we have those teams kind of still, we're matching them on the pitch, but we aren't going to catch them up on points until we're more consistent against the teams lower down, such as Plymouth. Like, you know, you're saying how Sunderland were playing Plymouth this weekend. We dropped points away to Plymouth, and although it's a really tough place to go, we went into the lead twice and still didn't manage to pick up all 3 points. So yeah, while we're inconsistent, I'm definitely not looking towards the Leicesters and the Ipswiches. I'm more looking towards the Sunderlands and the teams around the lower end of the playoffs. I'll be happy with that, considering kind of a lot of the squad's very new.
Yeah, and also given that you've got a lot of teams going into not very many places in the playoffs, it'll be great at the end of the season to make sure that you are one of those teams that can contest for getting into the Premier League. But compared to last season, the main absentee from your team is, like you mentioned before, Chuba Akpom, who has moved on to Ajax. How have you mitigated losing him?
I mean, I think some Borough fans will probably say we haven't. It's not just Chuba, it's also Cameron Archer, who I mentioned earlier on when we were talking about Anthony Gordon. The two of them were our absolute goal machines. I've not seen a striker at Middlesbrough that were more prolific than either of these two strikers were last season. Cameron Archer getting into double figures in half a season was just excellent. And I think that if Archer had been with Akpom the whole season, then I don't think that Akpom would have ended up with the 29 goals he ended up with. So yeah, in terms of replacing them, we brought in a striker in Emmanuel Latte-Lath. We brought him in from Atalanta. We spent quite a bit of money on him, reported $5 million. He looks really good. He looked, when he comes off the bench, very energetic. He absolutely terrorises defences. He hasn't been the most successful in front of goal so far. He gets the chances. Some keepers have had absolute worldies against us this season. I'm so sick of the fact that we keep seeing who scored highest rated keeper every week have been the keeper that's played Borough. I don't know whether that's because we're not scoring our chances, or it's because the keeper's somehow magically excellent against us. But yeah, Latte-Lath struggled in front of goal at the start of the season. He lost his place to Josh Coburn, who is a young lad. People might have heard of him from the goal he scored against Spurs in the FA Cup a few years ago that knocked out Spurs. He's only a young lad. He's only 21, I believe. So yeah, he spent last season on loan at Bristol Rovers in League One, now in Championship, and he's quite a polarising figure for the fan base. I think that everybody likes him in that he's a local lad and that he's come through our academy. However, he isn't the most prolific goal scorer, and that means the goals have been spread out across the midfield. We've seen goals from Matt Crooks this season, that two seasons ago under Wilder, Crooks was our top scorer. We've seen goals from Riley McGree. He's been playing off the left-hand side. Riley McGree tends to only really score absolute worldies. And then since Riley McGree's injury, we've had Sam Greenwood on loan from Leeds. He's been kind of filling in on that left-hand side, getting in at the back post, scoring. Morgan Rogers has just scored his first goal in the league as well against Birmingham. So he's looking good. So the goals are very much spread. So it's not that we're certainly not a low-scoring team. I think we're up there for the highest XG in the league. So we're certainly not a low-scoring team. However, in terms of last season, where they were mainly coming from two sources, that's definitely not the case anymore, because it's one of the most overused cliches when people say, oh, how are you going to replace the goals? Well, you don't replace them with one player. You have to adapt. The whole squad has to adapt, and we're seeing the goals come from all over the place now.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it with Tottenham as well, when they've lost Kane.
Exactly, yeah.
It's never necessarily a bad thing, losing such a prolific goal scorer, because once you stop having that reliance on one player, you get a lot more out of the other players in the team.
Yeah, it become a lot more versatile attack as well.
Yeah, you got a bit of a different angle as well. It's not like your opposition is not so much worrying about stopping one player from getting into the box and creating those chances like they were, say, with Akpom and Archer last year. It could almost be that they've got a lot more to worry about. So there'll always be one player who will be able to get a bit more space, a few more yards, be able to create a few more chances, because the defence just have too much to worry about now. Have you seen that a bit more this year?
Yeah, I'd say so. I think that Isaiah Jones coming back and playing a lot more regularly in a right wing position rather than a right wing back position, that certainly helps. He's a very direct winger in that he'll go to the byline. He always kind of used to. When Riley McGree was fit, he's known for being able to kind of make his way out of tight space. He's quite a tricky player, very good with his feet. So players like Riley McGree and then also his replacement, Sam Greenwood, both of them, such tricky players, very good with their feet. I guess that does cause defences an issue. And it's a complete different issue to kind of being able to try and mark out a one prolific goal scorer at the game. You're right in that sense. But I just think in general, the attack has become, I mean, we were last season anyway, very versatile. But it just means that more players this year have to step up. And, you know, maybe this year players are more likely to cut in and take a shot rather than they are looking for Archer and Akpom, who was off the ball movement was just superb. They don't really have our number nine this season in Coburn or Latelath, really. They aren't as talented off the ball as Akpom and Archer were, and they aren't making chances for themselves as easily. So yeah, we're scoring goals from half chances and things like that. I mean, Sam Greenwood's goal the other day, I don't know if you've seen it, but Sam Greenwood's goal against Leicester was a 30-yard free kick. it was the only goal that separated the game. We're giving teams more to worry about from different sides. Although, considering we have a big lanky lad up front in Josh Coburn, we do not put many crosses into the box at all. Short corners are the bane of my life sometimes.
Yeah, well, I guess if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
No, exactly. So, yeah, we play it on the floor. I mean, right down to the keeper. Even Senny Dieng he gives Borough fans heart attacks sometimes when he's like at the halfway line most of the game, I think, when the ball's in their half.
But has it ever cost you any goals yet this season? Or?
Not that I'm aware of. Senny Dieng's been excellent. He replaced Zach Steffen from last season, another loan that we lost. Yeah, I think the general consensus, maybe, so this is something my dad mentioned to me actually, and I think it's probably true, in that everyone was so scared about Zach Steffen last season that this season when Dieng's come in, because everyone got used to how Zach Steffen played last season in a similar way, always out his box, spent a lot of time on the ball, made risky passes, that when Dieng does it now, even though he does equally risky things, everybody's just thought, oh, well, that's what Carrick likes, that's how he expects him to play. It also helps that I think his shot-stopping abilities looked better this season. I mean, against Leicester, funnily you should say about has it cost us, against Leicester, he passed the ball out to I can't remember who it was now, but it was a player playing on the right-hand side for Leicester, passed the ball out to them, ended in a very, very good opportunity for them to score, and he made one of the best saves I've seen all season. And although he shouldn't have had to make that save because it came from his own risky pass, he kept us in the game by doing that, and we went up the other end and scored our goal. So yeah, at the moment, touch wood, it hasn't cost us, but maybe it will one day. But we score more from being able to build out from the back than we do concede from mistakes that it causes.
Yeah, I think it's prediction time again. Do you think Middlesbrough will make the playoffs?
On our current run, and I'm a reasonably optimistic fan, I will say yes, but it will be very tight. There's teams around us that look very good, and I think that when we play teams like Leeds and Ipswich in the next few weeks, we've got obviously got Sunderland to play again. When we play the teams around us, then we'll know for sure. But I think for now, I will say a cautious yes.
Yeah, I think in the next few months, we're going to get a much clearer picture, although I wouldn't be surprised either to just see this massive pack of teams chasing the playoffs just kind of remain within 3-4 points of each other. But yeah. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today, Joe.
Thank you very much for having me. I hope I've enlightened you on Northeast football.
Your Northeast footballing knowledge is, no one can beat it. So it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast, and hopefully you can join us again.
Yeah, hopefully.
And that concludes this episode of Sports Feed. Be sure to follow Purple Radio Sport on Instagram to stay updated, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Purple Radio Podcasts.
Thanks for downloading this Purple Radio podcast. For more great content and to listen live, head to purpleradio.co.uk.